Side 2, interview with Beatrice Kniff on March 18th, 1992, being conducted by Cheryl Throckmorton.
Since we were cut off earlier, I'd like to re-ask the question. During your marriage, you said that you were a little concerned about how your husband spent money. Did you kind of learn those values during the Depression?
Yes, I learned that you had to. You couldn't just spend all the time and expect to ever have anything, and I wanted to save things, money enough to eventually have something, furniture, clothes, whatever. But my husband, he always was beautifully dressed, and outwardly everything looked fine, but still we didn't get things. I mean, we didn't have a refrigerator even. After he came back from the service, it was 2 years before we even managed to get a refrigerator. But our own refrigerator. I think that there's a sort of depression mentality that a lot of us have been affected by. I have friends that have talked about that. You get in the habit of saving every little thing and not wasting and not throwing away and mending and doing without. And it's something like you're shackled with all your life. It's hard. It's hard for me, certainly most difficult for me, to watch my daughters the way they spend money with no thought about the future, so far as I can see. It's just living for the moment. And I keep thinking, my goodness, what if a real bad depression comes? And again, it's sort of like it haunts you. It's something you can't get away from.
So you think the younger generation has the wrong values when it comes to money?
Well, I think that that's entirely the fault of the parents, myself included. I was so determined that my children wouldn't have to suffer from deprivations. You know, if they wanted to take dancing lessons, they had them. If they wanted to go to plays, if they wanted to go to have the latest things, they had them. Toys, things like that, which I never had. But I was sure that I wasn't going to watch them be limited because of not being able to have the things that I had missed. I wanted them to have it. And then they got so they just expected it. It was just, that was the way life was. You have these nice things. They expected when they got married to move into a beautiful home and take off from there. But anyway, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
Earlier, before we began, you mentioned something about a poem. About your experiences at San Diego State College. Would you like to share that with me?
Yes, I'll share it with you. excuse me, I better turn that off. I'll change the name. In light of the recent, I've been writing poetry since I've retired, and in light of the recent scandals about sex harassment, I thought, well, I have something to say about that. And so this is what I wrote. Sexual harassment. Naylor was innocent, but he was not. And on that particular day, I was caught by a simple snag. The typewriter lost its A and began to drag, but so easily remedied. I was sent to another machine with another professor in another office. I had seen him before because he had looked at me before. But how did he look at me now? Could I say enviously? Did he want what Naylor had? My total interest in my work, my commitment to do it well, and my devotion to the man I worked for, with all of this, or so it seemed to me, I reflected on my good fortune. How could I have been so lucky? But knowing this, certainly I had the good sense to be professional. I dressed appropriately. I spoke appropriately. I respected and was respected by the man I worked for. For yet suddenly, here by this stranger, I was confronted. I was so shocked I could say nothing as he greeted me. Well, if it isn't Naylor's little office wife. Confused, I couldn't believe the innuendo. I kept confronting it, and then rejecting it. All the while my brain was thinking, but a wife is a woman a man sleeps with. Was I unduly sensitive or lacking in humor? Perhaps it was the glint in his eye, the curl of a slightly sardonic smile, that made anger arise within me. That made me know he thought I was sleeping with Naylor. But even worse, he took me for fair game. The restraint of my timidity precluded my response. Bringing me a Coke, he engaged me in trivial conversation. He stood too close to me, yet I managed to continue with my work assignment and finish the day. That night, sleepless, this unappealing, revolting man dominated my thoughts. I don't want him to think those things. Then I thought of my physical aversion. It had been so strong, I felt I had to keep looking backward over my shoulder, as if there was danger present. But why? He hadn't touched me. Wasn't this profound alienation really unfair? I said nothing. He spoke as I entered his office the next day. Well, my dear, you're back again. They really put you through your paces in that geology office, don't they? Here, let me make you more comfortable. He put down a pillow for me. Then he turned, slipped his hand about my waist, and pulled me toward him. I didn't want to create a scene, but standing rigid, I simply said, really, I have lots of work to do. Giving me a little pat, he amiably replied, oh, of course you do, but there'll be another day. I brought my finished work into our office. I turned to Naylor and said, I won't explain, but I'm telling you, I'll never go back to that office again. In return, his deep brown eyes leveled with mine and held seriously for a moment, as if he understood. He said simply, you won't have to. The typewriter will be back tomorrow.
Oh, dear. That's a personal experience, Mike, you say?
Yeah, it was.
So, things like that happened in those days.
Huh?
I said, things like that happened in those days.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I guess they're just not as well publicized as they are nowadays.
No, but that really happened. That was...
I don't know what I would do. I'd probably slap it.
Well, I was very much of a timid person, I think. Not handle that situation exactly so.
I like how you handled that. You just said, I'm not going to explain it, but I'm not going in that office again. That was very good. I like that.
Thank you.
That really says a lot.
Well, anyway, you want to know something memorable that happened? That was memorable in a way. Sort of a negative way. But...
yeah, I don't know if that's something I'd want to remember.
But it's not something you forget, too, you know? I got off lucky, I'd say, you know, as things go now. But still, that was happened.
Do you, well, as you say, you think impressions, do you think men's impressions of women, we're basically on the level of that teacher, you know, where you think the majority of men kind of thought like he did.
That women were just something to play with. And... right. Yes, I kind of think that was true.
Oh, at the time, did you have, like, many girlfriends at the time? You know, people... other women you interacted with at the time? And
no, I didn't. I had, oh, actually just one pretty good friend who was in geology with me. And aside from her, I didn't have time. I mean, I was just too busy. I had no time to socialize or be friendly with people. I didn't wasn't going to church at all, and so I didn't have any church affiliation at that time.
I was just wondering if, like, if she had any such problems, or how her life might have turned out, you know.
If what?
I was just wondering if she had any such problems at the time with men.
This girl that mm-hmm. Well, she was a kind of a no-nonsense girl. She wasn't going with men at that time. She never sort of she was also working for a professor and working her way through, and so it was just a question of not having time. Didn't have much to do with that. Well, we were kind of interested in some of the geology fellows, but I remember she, this one guy she was interested in, I think he was interested in her, and he was interested in me too. And so we were on a geology field trip, and I was sitting in the middle, and he was sitting in the middle between us, and so I remember he put his arm around her, and he put his arm around me at the same time. And I said to him, "Who do you think you are, God's gift to women or something?" So, anyway.
Did he happen to choose one or the other?
No, not really. He went with her for a while. He also went out with me for a while. But not very much. It was just not a steady thing at all.
After that incident with that teacher, did you have any other run-ins with men throughout the following years? Not necessarily in the harassment type, but were you had to confront men that wouldn't give you a chance or something?
No, I can't say that I did. I remember one time when I was facing sort of a crisis situation when my mother was in the hospital. A professor came to me and offered, and said, "If you need any financial help," he said, "let me know." He said, "I'll give you a personal loan." And, you know, that was something to remember, that he was, without my asking him. I can't think that there is much here.
I guess what I was trying to aim towards is I asked if there's prejudices against women during the Depression. And throughout the years following college, and I guess up till the present now, have you noticed in your own life that those prejudices perhaps tapered off, or, you know, did you run into them personally?
Well, I certainly ran into a prejudice when I was divorced. I paid off a Sears account, and then in a matter of a couple of months I went to reestablish credit in my own name, and they didn't want to give me credit because I wasn't married. But that was 1965, 66 or 67. But that was I was really insulted because I had paid the whole thing off and then couldn't get credit. But I did get credit, but they didn't act very enthusiastic about it.
How about in other aspects, like in your jobs? did you feel any prejudices there, or was teaching a woman's world?
Oh, I think men had an edge over the women. Women principals liked the men, for one thing. And I think that there was prejudice, reverse prejudice, you might say. They favored men more than they did women, when the principals were. Men principals. I always got along well with men principals. Anyway.
So you really didn't run into any brick walls along the way? Not really?
Prejudice? No. I had one principal that I thought was too aggressive with me, but it's all right. I mean, nothing, you know, he didn't. I think men are kind of inclined to play the field if they have an opportunity. And this one, this boy, I think he was married, but he obviously was trying to interest me. So, worked out all right because I didn't respond to him.
Speaking of prejudice, how was it for your mother back in the Depression era, being separated and I would assume divorced also? I mean, did that have any prejudices?
For my mother?
Yes.
Oh, she worked as a real estate agent. She was a broker. And she had 10 salespeople working for her at one time. And most of them were men. I don't know. I think that a strong woman doesn't have particular problems. She knows what she's doing, and she's doing what she is doing in a proper manner. Well, my mother was very successful in handling anything that came up with her.
So I was just wondering.
Men inclined to, they think, oh, a woman alone, you know, they let's go for it and let's see what goes on here. But a woman, if she has any capability at all, I think can control those situations.
So you think maybe there's definitely a stigma attached to a divorced woman, especially in those days?
Yes. Yes. I think so. I know my grandparents were really opposed to my mother getting a divorce. But she didn't get a divorce for one thing was that she actually didn't get a divorce until the first year I taught school because we were in a situation that she couldn't afford to get a divorce. My father said that he would fight her if she tried to get a divorce because on religious grounds he felt that she would be sinning if she were to, sinning in the eyes of the Lord, if she were to get a divorce and remarry. So, since she would not claim anything that was not true, in California you could not get a divorce unless you could prove infidelity. There was no infidelity. And so she just didn't get a divorce, that's all. But she didn't have the money. And then the first job I got, which was up in the mountains near Gardnerville, Nevada, right just over the border of Gardnerville in Woodford, California, she went up there with me, and she moved into Gardnerville, Nevada for 6 weeks. And she lived in an apartment in Gardnerville for 6 weeks. And then she got her divorce. And that was my first paycheck went to pay for her divorce.
Do you think not having two parents at that time put a stigma on you?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah, I felt that all through school.
Did the kids give you troubles, or was it just perhaps internalized and you kind of felt different?
Well, it was that, plus the fact that, the normal, what does your father do, and all that was never something I could answer very well. I could tell him my father, worked on the post office, but he wasn't in San Diego, he was in Portland, Oregon. But it was difficult because my mother's association was in the business world. She had certain friends, and she had a man friend, and that was a very great source of embarrassment to me because she was, and he was around our house a lot, you know. One of my friends made some remark about your mother's boyfriend, and that really, really bothered me a lot. So it affected me.
Being how you felt when your parents were separated, how did you look at your children when you were separated from your husband? Did you kind of feel maybe guilty or?
Oh, that was the hardest thing that ever happened to me, was getting a divorce. But my husband wasn't doing anything for my children. He wasn't being a father to them. And I felt that our situation was in such disrepair that it was a cold war going on all the time. And it was ridiculous. And plus the fact that my health was being affected by it. And I realized that I was getting so depressed I couldn't go around crying all the time. I had to do something to get out of the situation. And so that's when I decided to go back into teaching. It was when I felt the necessity. But for a long time I was influenced by my mother. She said, but the children need a father. Well, they didn't have a father. Not really. He was around, but he was never there for them. So.
So, going to college gave you the opportunity to have a career, even though in those days women were basically just getting married. Do you think that's a good idea for women of all ages and decades, that they should always have a career to back them up?
I believe so. Because there's such an uncertainty in life that you never know when you're going to be totally thrown out of your situation that you may be very happy in and have to do something different. Well, if you're not equipped to do something different, what can you do? You'll find yourself out on a limb. So it's just a question of common sense, I think, to not have all your eggs in one basket. Have something to fall back on. Besides, it gives you a totally different mental set, I think. I don't know how to express it exactly. You have an overview of things that you don't have. Without college, you are cut off from so much that's going on in the world. Your deeper understandings are just not there. Well, maybe that's not true. Depends on the individual, really, you get down to it.
So in a sense, college lets you see the world, in a sense?
It opens up vistas. It opens up ideas. And you can think about things that you normally would never think about, unless it was something you were involved in at that moment. And college involves you in a lot of things, if you're a general college education does. So you broaden, it has a broadening effect, I think.
Getting back to your field trips with your club, I was just curious, where'd you get to go and what'd you do?
Well, we would be talking about a certain feature in geology, a certain landscape, say a desert landscape. So we would make a trip to the desert and note the various landforms in the desert, and we'd make trips to the mountains. We went all over San Diego County. We mapped the area around Mount Palomar. When the observatory was being built, we were up there doing geological mapping, which meant that we ran a compass line from point A to point B, no matter what was in between, cliffs or whatever. Well, that was quite an experience, too, picking up geological samples as we went along to verify the type of terrain and the type of rock that we were going over. And so we spent about a week up there in Palomar, all around the observatory, mapping. We went out to the desert. We went to Cuyamaca Mountains and then up the coast. And we just went all over on these field trips, which were great because everybody, we had a certain informality. But we stayed overnight, as we did for a week. We stayed up in the cabin in Palomar. And it was a lot of fun, you know. After we're through with our work during the day, we're tired, but we'd sit around and talk and sing and socialize, you know. It was a social situation. And whenever we went on field trips, we managed to used to take along a big pot of spaghetti and have a campfire before we ended up and came home. And we got well acquainted with the fellows, the girls that were in the group there. That was fun.
Was that unusual at the time for men and women to be that close socializing on a common ground?
I don't know that they did it in any other areas. We were thrown together, I mean, we would carpool, four or five cars would go, and then certain people would ride with this car, certain people in this car, and it was just it was kind of an unusual situation, because that wasn't most of the people in college were sororities and fraternities, and they had a certain thing going back and forth, dances and things like that. Well, we weren't into that so much. The geology kids were all they were more interested in going out in the desert and letting tarantulas crawl up their arms or whatever. Finding white tarantulas in the desert was real interesting and also fun for the girls, because the boys thought that, you know, that they had something, and they didn't know that we would be brave enough to put our hand out and let the tarantula crawl up our arm. Anyway, it was sort of we became very camaraderie, I guess you'd call it, with the fellows. So that was actually the social part of my life in college.
Seeing of your great interest of geology, did you ever think of teaching it?
No, I didn't think of teaching geology. I was very interested in it, but I was into elementary education, not secondary or beyond. I was, before I got my job, Mr. Brooks suggested that I become his assistant in the lab the following year, because it, when I got out of school, jobs were just practically non-existent. There weren't any jobs. But my mother, enterprising person that she was, she wrote 52 letters, one to every superintendent of schools in the state of California, each county, and the county superintendents. And out of that, her work, I got two jobs. I had two contracts. The first contract I was offered was in Bakersfield, in a county hospital. And I was to be in charge of teaching teenage mentally retarded students, boys. Well, it didn't appeal to me, but it was a job. And so I took the job. And then I had the car all packed and ready to go. And at about 10:30 on this day, when I was leaving to go up there to take the job, I had the contract. I thought, well, I'll just wait and see what the mail brings. And sure enough, the mail brought me another job. I got an offer for a job in Woodfords, California, teaching Indian children and in all one school, one teacher school. Well, I checked out the Bakersfield situation and decided that I would just keep right on going. So I waved them goodbye, and I went right on up. I sent a telegram to Woodford saying that I would